Somers to Yonkers, Tarrytown to Portchester.
We've got Westchester covered.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
Adventure Girl, explore your world.
Live from City Center at White Plains, Westchester Talk Radio presents the 28th edition of Fran's World. This is Jim Cleefield speaking. Fran's World is produced by Shark Creative and made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center, Hightower, Westchester. Your wealth is managed to a fiduciary standard. White Plains Hospital, exceptional every day. Westchester County Office of Economic Development, Robeson, the house that service built, and Accorda Therapeutics, Life Science. Please download the Westchester Talk Radio app on iTunes through the App Store at Westchester Talk. You can like us on Facebook at Westchester Talk Radio, and please follow us on Instagram. We are at Shark Creative. And now the show starring the woman who really loves to talk. She's the world's fastest talking woman. She lives in her world, and we're welcome to it. It's Fran's World. And now, here's your host, Fran Capo.
Hey, guys. Oh, you see, we have this beautiful Christmas music here at City Center just to get everybody in the mood. And the other reason is because we can't get it turned off. But it is just so to have the mood here. But I haven't seen you guys in a month, as always. And you know that I went to the volcano. I became the first woman in the world to zip line inside the volcano. And an active volcano, Messiah. And I also became the first person ever to do a TEDx talk in under 1 minute. So now I actually hold 8 world records. So I gathered 2 more new world records since I saw you guys last. So that's pretty cool. And if anybody's looking for things to do for the holiday, and I know I spoke to you about this, Matt, they have a place called Animal Adventure Park. It's in Harpers, Harpursville. It's near Binghamton. And you get to do a half-hour encounter petting a sloth and feeding the sloth and watching the sloth. And as an addition, it was really funny because in that cage where there were the 3 sloths, you know, and they're not moving very fast, so it's got to be a long encounter because, you know, you can't be sitting there going, all right, do something. So the thing's over there. And so all of a sudden, I see in the corner this, like, little pile of hay moving. And I'm like, what is that? And she goes, oh, I forgot to tell you about Armando. I go, who's Armando? And why is he hiding under the hay? It turns out Armando is this adorable, like the size of a grapefruit, armadillo. And when you pick him up, he's wrapped up in the ball, but you can feel his little heartbeat as you're holding the hard shell. And when you put him down on the ground, all of a sudden, I guess he's going, all right, it's safe. And he starts unfolding like a leaf, you know, coming out in the summertime. And all of a sudden, he's unfolding. And then, I swear, it's like a little cartoon character. He gets up, looks around, and runs like a roadrunner. He's like, zoom, zoom, zoom. And it's so funny because the sloths are looking at him, but their heads can't keep up with as fast as this little thing is zipping around. So if you were looking for something to do over the Christmas holiday break, going to Animal Adventure Park, and also in Binghamton, there's this beautiful mansion called Robeson Mansion that you can go to, and the guy had bucks. That's all I could say. His place has got like 50 Christmas trees in it. I'm like, is that a little overkill? But it's decorated beautifully.
It's the magic of the season.
Exactly. You're going to have Christmas trees from all over. So we have a very special show, and I would say this show is almost dedicated to music because all my guests have some kind of connection to music. And my first guest is an author, journalist, publicist, editor. His name is Mike Greenblatt, who is one of the 500,000 who actually attended the iconic weekend known as Woodstock. He was only 18 years old at the time. He's written a compelling book that documents the event of 1969 that was released for the 50th anniversary, called, appropriately enough, Woodstock's 50th Anniversary Back to Yeager's Farm. What it does is it tells his story and also features interviews with some of the performers. But over the years, years since Mike Greenblatt has interviewed many of the greatest rock and roll talents like Elton John, the Eagles, Blondie, Paul McCartney, on and on and on. He spent his entire life listening to music and telling people about it. He started out, and he's a Jersey boy, and as a music editor of the Aquarian Weekly, and then he went on to write for other papers like the Village Voice. And he's got some really cool stories, because he's done everything from flown in a private jet with Hank Williams, drove around Jersey Shore with Springsteen, been angrily thrown against a backstage wall by Meatloaf. That's a lot of poundage there. And been locked in a dressing room with Jerry Lee Lewis threatening to kill him. But today, he's a lot calmer, and he lives in Easton, Pennsylvania with his music teacher wife and their two rescue Beatles, so you know he's got a good guy at heart. And please welcome Mike Greenblatt, a former Jersey boy. How are you, Mike? Oh, great, great. Oh, wait, hold on a second. Can we hear? Okay, yeah. All right, I'm glad that you're here. All right, so let's start. So I understand that you and your friend Neil left your, as you say it, meaningless jobs filled with canceled policies at Newark Insurance Company and arrived the day before the concert began, thus getting some prominent space close to the stage. Tell me how you guys just decided what the heck we're going to do this.
Well, we weren't going to go. Led Zeppelin was playing down the shore, and we had plans to go see Led Zeppelin, but at our lousy job at Concord Insurance, they had the radio on, tuned to WNEW-FM, one of the first FM rock stations, and they kept on advertising this event, and we kept hearing the names of all these groups that we loved, every single one of them, and it was the only chance we thought we would ever have to see them all in one weekend on the same stage. We had to go.
See you, Merry Christmas.
Oh, wow. That, yeah, you definitely. It's one of those things that after a while they keep saying it over and over and over, and you're like, listen, I may be missing out on an event. And at that point, of course, nobody knew it was going to be the historic event that it turned out to be.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. We drove up there. We had no idea what we were in for. Nobody did. And when we got there, we didn't know what to do, where to go, who to give our ticket to. There were no gates. There was no ticket window. So we just left the car where we were told with all of our stuff, thinking, well, let's just find the stage at least, and then we'll come back to the car, and we'll get our tent and clothing and food and water and pot and all the other things we brought. And the truth of the matter was, we never made it back to the car.
Yeah, how could you? You don't want to lose those prime spots that you had. It was like 500. How many people were there?
500,000 people. And the reason we're talking about it today, 50 years later, is because although it was the third largest city in the state for 4 days, and they ran out of food, and they ran out of water, and there wasn't enough bathrooms, and add horrible weather, but there was not one reported instance of violence the entire 4 days.
Isn't that amazing?
Which is almost impossible because there was no police.
Well, okay. But you know what? On both ends, that's good. First of all, a concert today, you can't even bring any one of those items you just mentioned, unless maybe it's like the Burning Man where they have that, you know, where you bring tents and no money or whatever. And by the way, how much was a ticket for Woodstock?
$17.50 for all 3 days.
Holy moly, like $5 a day. That is amazing. Can you imagine? You can't even get like 2 apples for $5, much less see that. So now, what was your favorite personal moments of the festival?
Well, there were a few. I think, though, that the thing that stands out in my mind and the thing that I continue to think about to this day, and it's all in the book, although I was censored. My editor did a great job in the book, and he made it more readable, and he tightened it up, but he did censor some of the stuff.
Ah.
And one of the stories that he censored...
Good. Give it to us. Yes. Good.
Well, I can't really give it to you in detail on the radio, but it's a girl in the lake.
Okay.
The Girl in the Lake was my favorite part of Woodstock. I mean, one of the bands was really boring, Sweetwater. I thought they were awful. And that's why no one ever heard of them. today. And I left. I left our spot. Neil stayed there, and I went in search of whatever. And there was a lake right by the stage, and it was really hot. And I came upon an unbelievable 60s tableau of a bunch of naked girls in the lake.
Oh, my gosh.
I couldn't believe it. I thought I was hallucinating. I mean, I hadn't yet taken the brown acid, but I thought I was hallucinating. So I whipped my clothes off, and I put it on a rock, hoping nobody would steal my dirty clothes. And I jumped in, and then I saw her, the girl in the lake. And I fell in love with her. And who's to say it wasn't true love?
That's right.
When you meet a girl for the first time, when you're 18, whether it's at the library or a park or at work, you're usually not both naked.
No, that's you. Unless you're in that show, Naked and Afraid. Yeah.
So I asked her to come back to my spot. I kept bragging about what a great spot we had right in front of the stage. And she goes, no, I got to get back to my boyfriend.
Oh.
And I just crumbled.
Yeah, you did. I can imagine that because you're like, wait a minute. It can't get any better than this. Now it just got worse. So it was both the high point and the low point, I would say, then, of the festival.
No, it was just the high point. The low point was Sunday. Right after Joe Cocker, it got really dark in the middle of the afternoon. I had just taken some acid that a kindly lady had given me with a loaf of bread because I was starving by that point. The food had run out. And I ate the loaf of bread. Neil went off to find a phone booth to call our moms to tell them that we were all right because God knows what she was listening to on the radio and on the TV.
Right.
They called it a disaster area. She must have been freaking out in fear that I was going to come to a bad end. But Neil didn't come back for the longest time. And the brown acid started kicking in. And then the monsoon came on Sunday. And they had to stop the music for like 4 hours. And it poured. And it poured. And I stood there, tripping, freaking out, and it wasn't fun anymore. I got really paranoid, and it got scary. And all of this sense of paranoia is in the book, which is why I feel, anyway, my book stands out from the glut of other books about Woodstock, because I really do put the reader in the middle of that craziness.
Well, that's what people want to hear, because when there's an event that happens that people know about in history, you kind of want to know the good and the bad, what was the person feeling. You don't want to just hear, and then this happened, and then there were 500,000 people, and then they stood over here, and they heard these things, because that's boring, boring, boring. You want to get, like, the naked girl, or maybe that's not in there, but whatever. You want to get, because I read that you said that right after you took it, there was a warning on stage not to take the brown acid, and you said, did I hear that right? Was that the thing I just took?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely correct. About a half an hour to 45 minutes after I took the acid, the warning from the stage, don't take the brown acid. And I said, oh, no, I just took it.
Oh, my gosh. Now, also, you witnessed the encounter between Pete Townsend of The Who and the activist Abby Hoffman, who had tried to interrupt the set to give some kind of political nonsense. And apparently someone cracked her on the head with a guitar?
Yeah, Pete Townsend took his guitar and he hit him over the head with it hard. And it wasn't nonsense. He was right. Abby Hoffman did a great job at Woodstock feeding people. You know, they brought in the hog farm from New Mexico to give out food. They brought like 1,000 pounds of grain and oats and raisins and bread. I think granola was invented at Woodstock. But I didn't know that at the time. I only found out about that years later. I really didn't go anywhere else besides the stage area and the lake. I wished I would have known about that free food that they were giving out. But Abby Hoffman was helpful in the medical tent, talking people down off bad trips. He helped feed people, and he happened to be on stage when The Who was performing Tommy in its entirety. And during a break, he was tripping too, and he jumped up on stage, which he probably shouldn't have done. And he said, this is all nonsense. When John Sinclair rots in prison for two joints, it was a bit of political reality that Pete Townsend wasn't having, and
not that I love that he did that, but I love that the reality of what happened is in your book, and that is why it makes your book different. Because in your book, you even write, and, you know, so many people do love the Grateful Dead, but you write that the Grateful Dead at Woodstock put everybody to sleep.
Oh, they were awful. Oh, my God. We were yelling at the stage. You suck! Get off the stage! They were terrible!
I love your honesty. Now, you know, the other cool thing is, you know, you're a rock critic, so you're allowed to get interviews with many of the top people and performers. So, and you tell some of those stories in the book also, right?
Well, that's another thing. You hit the nail on the head a second time.
A lot of nails. You know, good thing I have this hammer.
You're good, man. my editor, when he got the first draft, he goes, Greenblatt, you can't do a story. It sounds like how I spent my summer vacation. This is not what we want. You've got to interview other people, get other perspectives. And you know what? He was right. So I did 32 interviews with people like Carlos Santana, Graham Nash, the guy that did the sound, the guy that did the lights, even some of the kids that climbed up on those light towers that they kept saying, get off the light towers. It's amazing that I found these people. And the confluence of perspectives, like a tapestry, like a mosaic, it was, I put it all together, and I think it came out great.
Well, it sounds fantastic. I mean, I, you know, only found out that that you and I were going to be talking, you know, as you know, last night. So I have not had a chance to read the book, but I definitely want to have an autographed copy, and I want to read this book and tell people about it. And, you know, just your personality, I love it. If your book is anything like the way you speak, this is going to be an amazing book with you. Just having this energy, I can feel that the energy must pop off the page when you write.
Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. Okay, that was a very sobering moment. Thank you. You're welcome. Okay. Now, one other thing I want to say, because I read somewhere that you say that you maintained, that you're able to maintain a state of musical zen when you go to concerts today, despite whatever is happening around you, because of your Woodstock experience.
That's absolutely correct. You sure you didn't read the book?
You would think. I am very good at researching.
Wow. Well, it's true. One of the lifelong lessons that I learned from going to Woodstock is the concept of music as salvation. In other words, as long as the music's playing, everything's going to be all right. And it doesn't matter if you're cold and tired and hungry and thirsty and have to go to the bathroom and trapped and wet, as long as the music's playing. And I've taken that as my mantra to today, which is why that today's crowds with their cell phones, and or if they're talking or if they're sitting in front of me and I can't see the stage, it doesn't matter. As long as the music's playing, everything's going to be all right. And I learned that from Woodstock.
See, I think that's a beautiful takeaway as we close up this interview for the holiday season. No matter what happens around you, if you have some relatives that are nasty at the event, you know, whatever, at your family dinner, somebody who sticks their fingers in the pie, whatever it happens to be, you just need to say, you know what, as long as, in this instance, everybody's around that I love, that I like, whatever, everything's going to be okay. So we'll do that as a takeaway. Now, just once again, tell people the name of your book and where they can get it.
It's Woodstock, Back to Yazgar's Farm. You can get it on Amazon. In fact, you can go to my author page, Mike Greenblatt, at Amazon. See if you can identify the seven celebrities that I put myself with. Because, you know, luckily, I had a lifetime of talking to these kinds of people. And thank God that I asked them about Woodstock. So you've got interviews with people that are dead, like Joe Cocker, Richie Havens, and others. So go on Amazon, go to the Mike Greenblatt author page. You can buy it at Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. It's out there. You'll love it.
Great. And just so you guys know, it's M-I-K-E, Mike, in case you people don't know how to spell, G-R-E-E-N-B-L-A-T-T, Mike Greenblatt. Thank you so much, and have a happy holiday. Great having you on.
It was fun. Okay. Thanks for having me on.
Take care. We'll be right back with more Fran's World in just a minute.
At Indian Point, we've helped power Westchester and New York City for about four decades.
Recently, as part of an agreement with New York State, we are working toward an early and orderly shutdown of the facility by 2021. Until then, we'll continue safely generating about 25% of the reliable, round-the-clock electricity that powers the city and Westchester, all with virtually no greenhouse gas emissions. Safety is, as it always has been, the top priority for everyone at the plant. We will continue to keep Indian Point fully staffed, and full-time inspectors from the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission will monitor our daily operations. We'll also continue to play an important role in our community as a taxpayer and active participant in local charities. Indian Point Energy Center is still working for you, and it's our honor to continue to serve the people of New York. If you have questions about our ongoing operations, please visit safesecurevital.com.
News, trends, and more.
No one knows Westchester County better than we do.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
Adventure Girl.
You're listening to Fran's World live at City Center, sponsored by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center, Lapolis Electric, Genesis Exhibits, Warburg Home Health Care and Rehabilitation Care, Facelifts Remodeling, featuring fine paints of Europe. We're not talking the other kind of facelifts. And the White Plains YMCA. YMCA? I don't know why. Why? YMCA. Anyway, what? YMCA. That's what it say. My engineer is correcting me. What are you doing? All right. Anyway, we are ready. We just had a fantastic interview with Mike, and now we have another great person on the line. So, on the line is Tiffany DeRosier. She's a versatile pop Vancouver Canadian singer and songwriter who shared the stage with David Foster, Ben Harper, Jackson Brown, Colin James, the Canadian tenors, Mark Macy, and some guy named Loverboy. Her voice has been described as soft enough to stroke flames, but also booming with enough power to light up a city grid. Hey, that's a good description. She is featured on the new song that Academy Award-winning Frankie Previtt, you know the guy who wrote Dirty Dancing, I had him on the show before, composed called Merry Christmas, Everybody. Merry Christmas, Everybody was produced by two-time Grammy-nominated Daryl Bennett and arranged by Roy Tan. And the concept for the song came about because Christina Aguilera asked Frankie to compose a Christmas song, and the rest I will let my guest explain how she got involved with this whole thing. Tiffany, how are you?
I'm good. How about you? Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, you're welcome. So first, before we get to the holiday song, how long have you been singing?
I've been singing, I have to do some math here, about 34 years.
And what are you?
No, wait.
You're 32? No, I'm
24.
Only kidding. I was singing in my mom's womb. No, go ahead. No, you were singing for 34 years. That's a long time. And did you...
24.
All right, whatever.
I'll take the 10 years if I can take it off.
We'll divide it. How about 27? Okay, and a half. Sold. Okay. But you've been doing it for a while. Let's put it that way. And so is this something you always wanted to do? I mean, did you, like, say to your mom, you know, hey, mommy, when I grow up, I want to sing for a living? Or how did it come about?
Acting lessons when I was really, really young. I started off as a young child actress, and what happened was there was this one time in the acting class where the lady that was teaching the class, she also did a singing component, and she said, Tiffany, you take this line. And I was so nervous that I messed up where I was supposed to come in, and so she cut me off, and she was like, Natasha, you take it instead. And because of how it was handled, I was like, I'm going to prove her wrong and show her that I can sing. And so I set out, and my mom around the same time put me in voice lessons because my grandma was a singer, and she sang in choirs, and my grandma thought I had a natural knack for it, and so it was just developed from there.
Oh, that's great, because you know what? I love that when you take lemons and you make them into lemonade. You didn't say, oh my gosh, this teacher, she cut me off, let me go in the corner and hide. You were like, listen, I'm going to kick your butt and show you that I can sing. And that's what I like. And I bet your grandmother was going, don't listen to that lady. What the hell does she know? Nobody knows her name. So I'm glad you did what you did. So what was your big break?
When I was, so when I was, throughout my teen years, I competed in classical voice competitions, locally, provincially, nationally, and so that was where I got a lot of my initial training. And then I really, really wanted to learn how to sing pop music. Like, Celine Dion is one of my idols. I think she has one of the best voices in the world. And so I set out to try to emulate her. And my mom put me in lessons with a pop teacher so I could learn how to sing pop music, because I kind of wanted to be a little bit of a hybrid of, like, say, a female Josh Groban. That's kind of what I was going for at the time. So from there, what happened was there was this group that this management company was developing, that was how eventually Vivace was formed. So,
but what is Vivace? Is that your group? I'm sorry, I don't know what that is.
Yeah. So Vivace is basically a quartet. Four singers, so there's two male voices, two female voices, and it's in the classical crossover genre, the popper genre, kind of like Andrea Bocelli or Sarah Brightman or the tenors.
Oh, wow.
Or Il Divo.
Love
in that
it.
Vein. And so the other two of the voices that are on Merry Christmas, Everybody, the song that you're probably going to ask me about, they're actually on that track, as well as myself and as well as Mark Masri, who's a special guest.
So wait, so now how did you get it? Okay, so you loved the pop song. Oh, by the way, I just, as a side note, I went on, you know, looking you up and stuff, and I love that song, your Fearless song. I thought that was beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I was like, yes, because that's how I live my life. I love this song, because I bungee cord jump, scuba dive with sharks. I just ziplined into an active volcano. Whatever.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, so that's, I have a song called Adventure Girl, and it's all about what I do. But when I heard your song Fearless, I'm like, oh, this is the classy version of Adventure Girl. Okay, so anyway.
I love it.
So now, how did you get involved with Merry Christmas, Everybody?
Yeah, so Ken Franklin, he is a music agent, and a couple of years ago, he was looking for songs to license for different projects, and so I was connected with him, and he ended up licensing a couple of my songs for a couple of projects he had on the go. So, fast forward a couple of years later, I didn't hear from him for a couple of years, and then he reached out earlier this year, actually in January, so in, just under a year ago, and he said, hey, Tiffany, I have this song. He had a couple of songs, and this one in particular stood out. He said, do you think you would be interested in recording Merry Christmas, Everybody, which my friend Frankie Prevert wrote? And originally the song was meant for Christina Aguilera, but it was shelved because her management turned it down because they wanted something more upbeat. So I heard the song, and I showed a couple of my colleagues in Vivace, and I said, hey guys, would you be interested in joining on the song? And then the rest was history, and so we ended up recording it in the summer. Of all times.
Ah, but that's good, because, you know, then it gives people time to get to learn about it, and now it comes out perfect timing, you know, Merry Christmas, Everybody. Not good if it comes out in July. So it's good that it's out now.
Exactly.
And now I don't, because, by the way, Ken Franklin is the one who got my start in the voiceover business, because I was working at WBLS-FM radio, and there was this girl, Pat Prescott, and she was doing voiceovers, and she goes, oh, you do all these different voices. Why don't you meet my agent, Ken Franklin? And that's actually, Ken was very instrumental in the way that I actually got to break the world record of being the world's fastest talker. So Ken is a great guy. So,
wow.
Yes. So So Ken has played an important role, and that's why Ken was like, "You gotta have Tiffany on." I'm like, "Of course I'll have Tiffany on." So anyway, so just curious. So when a song comes to you, because, you know, I'm a comic, so I don't, you know, this is a different world to me. So when a song comes to you, is it in its, like, form and you just have to go there and sing, or do you change it so that it's in your pitch, or how does that work?
So the original demo that we heard was for female voice, just for female voice. It was a very different key than it's in now. So what we did is, because there were four different voices involved, we actually recorded it, each of us, each of the singers involved, in a different key. And then we sent it to Roy Tan, who was the arranger, and the producer, Gerald Bennett. And it was actually Roy that was like, no, I think this key would work well with all of your voices based on what I've heard each of you, like, after hearing each of us perform it.
Right.
He came up with the key that he thought would work the best and then arranged each of the vocal parts according to that key.
Oh, I love it. See, you know, people don't often know the backstory. You know, they just think everybody gets in a room, they sing, you know, they do it a couple of times, and it's like, okay, good, we're done, see you later. But it's so much more involved. And it's just, that's the same thing. It's people come up to me and go, you're a comic, let me give you a joke. I'm like, what, one from the internet? You want me to use that? Is that what you're talking about? You know what I mean? Like, people have no clue what goes into performing. So that's why I always like to ask people, like, how the process came about. So where can people hear the song? Or sample the song. Where can they get it, buy it, hear it?
So radiotv.com.
R-A-D-I-O TV, just the word TV, at the initials TV.com. Radiotv.com is where they could hear it and purchase it, right?
Yes, that's right.
That's great. And do you have a website also for people to hear you?
I do. So it's, okay, I'll have to spell it because my last name's a little bit of a tricky one. But it's tiffanyderosier.com. So it's T-I-F-F-A-N-Y. Derosier is D as in Donald, E-S-R-O-S-I-E-R-S.com.
Okay, so people, if not, just do Tiffany, pop culture singer, Tiffany, Merry Christmas, everybody, in case you didn't have a pen and paper to spell D-E-S-R-O-S-I-E-R-S, you know, because...
Or they could do Tiffany Fearless, Tiffany, you could do classical crossover Fearless.
Okay, so there you go. Tiffany Fearless. Okay.
Vancouver. They enter Vancouver.
You know, people, when they're determined, they can find somebody. So that's, I mean, and that's always how I say, if you want to do something, you find a way. If you don't, you find an excuse. Oh, I couldn't. I could lose weight. Why? Because you ate 150 brownies for breakfast? Yeah, okay. Tell me another thing. But anyway, so Tiffany, I am so happy that you have this wonderful song, Merry Christmas, Everybody, that is out now. You sound like a wonderful person, and I love your story of determination of how you said, yeah, you put me in the corner. Tiffany, don't sit in no corner. And then Tiffany now is a very big star. I love it. So thank you so much for being on the show. Have a happy holiday. And again, go to Media, right? Media TV. Wait.
Radio TV. RadioTV.com.
Oh, RadioTV.com, right? RadioTV.com.
Right.
Okay, go to RadioTV.com to hear the song Merry Christmas, Everybody. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, there's a video up there and everything.
Oh, video too. Hey, we get to see you. Okay, sounds good. All right. Have a wonderful holiday, and thank you so much for being on the show. And everybody, we will be back in a few minutes with more of Fran's World Christmas Edition here live at City Center. See you soon.
Look outside your window. What would you like to see? Imagine all the things that could be done to beautify your property. At Michael Labriola, we've led the field over 35 years. Our expert staff brings all their best to give you what you need.
For more than 40 years, Michael Labriola Incorporated has provided complete landscape construction and site development services that will add beauty, enjoyment, and value to your property. Want to make some changes to your landscape this spring? Maybe extending your living space to the outdoors with a functional outdoor kitchen or adding a patio or walkway? Michael Labriola Incorporated can evaluate your property and offer creative ideas. 914-273-6530. Commercial properties always welcome. Learn more at michaellabriolainc.com.
Michael Labriola, our last name is the first name in landscapes.
You're listening to Westchester Talk Radio.
Powered by Shark Media, a division of Shark Creative.
And made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center.
Visit SafeSecureVinyl.com.
Adventure Girl, explore your world.
And we're back at Fran's World, live at City Center with our show number 28th, Christmas edition, holiday edition. I don't want to leave anybody out. All right. So we're back. And how are we back? Because we have these wonderful sponsors. Entergy Indian Point Energy Center, Durante Rentals, Reverso Associates, J.P. McHale Pest Management. You know, those little bugs running around, they kill them. Michael Labriola. Their last name is the first name in landscape. All right. It doesn't start with an A, but that makes sense. Michael Labriola. And don't forget to download the Westchester Talk Radio app on iTunes through our app. And don't forget to go to FranCapo.com to see where I'll be doing my shows live for you people and for other people too. Anyway, our next guest, we've had a great show today. Music, and more music. And now we have more music. Okay, so our guest on the line is Ramona John. Jan is a singer-songwriter. As a 19-year-old, she came to New York City and became an audio engineer at the iconic Media Sound Recording Studios. Some of the sessions Ramona has been involved in include, get this, Frank Sinatra, disco recording, also working with Mick and Keith and many others. So she's got to see what those people were like backstage. Please welcome Ramona Jan. How are you, Ramona? That is fantastic. So, are you on speakerphone?
No.
Yeah, hold on. Sorry. We're on. Okay, we're on. Yeah. Okay, put her louder. Okay, we want to make sure our guests can hear you. All right, here we go. There we go. I'm welcoming you again. How are you? I'm fine. Good. All right. So, what was your training when you decided as a 19-year-old to just come to New York City? First of all, where were you living before then? Oh, so it wasn't that far. Okay.
No, it wasn't that far, but back then it was.
Right.
You know, back then you didn't just get on a bus and go to New York City like we do today.
Right. Now, let me ask you something. Did your parents approve of this, or did you just, like, sneak out in the middle of the night?
They absolutely did not approve of it. They were very unhappy that I left home. I left home at 19 and moved to New York City. That's what I did.
Well,
basically, I started work. I worked for 1 month for a realty company, and they never paid me, so I needed a different job. And I was invited to. I was a songwriter, so I was invited by someone to record some of my songs at this studio for free. And the minute I walked in, I just knew it was the place I needed to be. Not to become a recording engineer, but because I was a songwriter, and in those days there were no home studios, you had to.
You had to be in a studio, right? Of course.
Yeah. So I marched myself up to the manager's office and asked for a job. I had no prior training. I told him I'd always wanted to be a recording engineer. I didn't want to end up in the secretarial pool, mostly because I couldn't type.
Okay, that's a good reason.
And also, you know, I wanted to be where the action was. So they just asked me one question, and that was, are you a groupie? And I said, no. And keep in mind, Fran, that I had no resume. Nothing
I love it.
Just there. I was just there.
You just said you had a big set of the kahunas. Yes.
I guess. So anyway, then they said I should talk to one of the owners. Two of the owners had financed the Woodstock concert, and that was John Roberts and Joel Rosenman. And the third owner was a wedding band trumpet player named Bob Walters. He was the available person at the time for me to talk to.
Right.
Now, he did ask me if I had any background in, you know, recording. And I told him, this is what I told him, that I don't know why I thought this would constitute background in recording, but I told him my mother was an electrician and my father was a piano tuner. These are both lies. But at that point, I figured, hey, the worst that could happen is he'd say, well, you're lying, get out of here, right? But he didn't. His mouth dropped open and he said, can you start Monday?
I love it. You know why? Because you had the attitude of just say yes and figure it out later. And the fact that he said, all right, your father's an engineer and my mom's a piano tuner or vice versa, whatever it was. And he was like, all right, that'll do. I love it.
Yeah. And then from then on, for decades, he told people that I had the greatest DNA for a recording engineer. You know, there were no schools back then for that to become an audio engineer. You learned on the job. You got paid while you learned. It was an apprenticeship. And
so was there somebody teaching you, though? Was there another engineer, like, showing you how to do it? Or you just, like, were figuring out? I mean, there was no YouTube that you could check.
Well, I learned from the best. And people who follow this will know the names. Bob Clearmountain, Tony Bon Jovi. I worked with the best, Brian Eno. I worked with the best people. I learned from the best.
Wow. So I love that backstory. So now you worked with Frank Sinatra in the 1977 disco sessions. I didn't even know Frank Sinatra did a disco thing. But what was that like?
He was an icon even then. As far as I was concerned, you know, it was just another day at work. I was cleaning my refrigerator, defrosting it, actually, the morning of the session. I did buy a black cashmere turtleneck for the day. I was like, oh, I'm working with Frank today, so I better, like, have something nice to wear.
Well, especially after you clean out your refrigerator. Yes, definitely.
Yeah. And I remember chipping the ice away. A lot of people listening to this aren't going to know what that means, but chipping at the ice box and thinking, I'm not going to make the session on time. But I did, of course, because I had to. He came with an entourage.
Okay.
Bodyguards and a wife. And I sensed that a lot of people were very afraid of him. I was 21. It was on my 21st birthday, actually. It was actually my birthday that day.
Oh, how cool.
And, I wasn't afraid of him, but everybody's so afraid of him that it was odd. It was kind of, there was tension in the air to the point where he kind of was calling a lot of the shots. The producers usually tell the artists what to do, and they would be asking him, like, okay, so how was that take, Frank? And he would say, not good.
Wow.
I want to do it again.
Wow. See, yeah, well, that's when you know that the person has, he had confidence. That's the thing. It's like there's a lot of stars out there, but they still listen to direction. But then when you get to that stature, you're like, no, I know what's good. I know what's not. And they figured if they said anything different than what he was going to do, they weren't going to listen. But the best part is that you didn't have that intimidation, because when you don't feel that, then you're calm and relaxed. You're like, all right, we'll do it again. Not a problem.
Yeah, he was just another day at work.
Yep, and then you've done the same thing, like you worked with Mick Jagger. So was that similar, where he called the shots, or how was that?
They were the producers, Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, known as the Glimmer Twins, were producing John Phillips' solo record called Pay, Pack, and Borrow, and Follow, sorry, Pay, Pack, and Follow.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it came out under another name as well. It might have also come out as the Pussycat Lounge. I have to say that on that particular session, the senior engineer, whose name is Harvey Goldberg, Harvey J. Goldberg,
uh-huh.
He was really the producer. Keith and Mick had a heavy hand when the background vocalist came in. But otherwise, he wasn't there much. It was more Keith there. And they weren't your typical producer, let's just say that.
Well, that I figured. Now, so when you're working there, I mean, obviously you're the engineer there. Your name, does your name get put anywhere, like on the albums or anything? Like it was engineered by and Tiffany, or no? Ramona.
Tiffany. Yeah. Maybe I'll use that name.
Did they put the Tiffany name on there? Yeah, go ahead.
Typically, people who were looking to have a career as an audio engineer would follow up and make sure their name was on the record by communicating with the record company. And I never did that because I wasn't looking to have a career as an audio engineer. I was a musician, and so, I was playing in bands at the same time.
Okay,
and that's
so,
what I was interested in.
All right, so let me ask you that. So are you still an audio engineer, or did you now switch to being in front of the mic?
Yeah, I left Media Sound in probably like maybe 1980, and from then on, I played music in bands, different bands.
Great.
My first band was.
So where can people hear you now? Like, do you have songs on Amazon or on iTunes? Where can they hear your songs?
Okay. Well, I have a couple of CDs right now on CD Baby, and that would be the name of my band now is called Jan Turan. It's combination of my last name and my music partner's last name, so it's spelled J-A-N-T-U-R-A-N, and you just have to go to CD Baby and search Jan Turan.
Jan Turan.
You just have to do a Google search. We have videos, and we play live.
Oh, good.
All
so
the time.
In the tri-state area or anywhere?
Yeah, in the tri-state area, and we'll actually be doing a library tour come this spring, so we may come to your library.
Oh, okay. Well, we have a couple, so what you should do, I mean, you're going to have a list somewhere on your website. What's your website?
We use Facebook, and if you like us on Facebook, we're Jan Turan Band on Facebook. If you like us on Facebook, there's something called Bands in Town that you just check, and it will let you know where we're going to be.
So basically, guys, if you want to hear Ramona's songs, you go to Jan Turan on Facebook or CD Baby, and then you could see where she's going to be playing, and you could go check her out live. And, hey, when you're in the library, you can go there, you could read about her, then you could listen to her. It'll be a great thing, and she's going to be on tour. So I guess you have to follow her on Facebook to be able to find out where she's doing all that. So
Facebook, we're Jan Turan Band, because there's actually, after we made that name of our combination of our last names, we found out there's a country in Indonesia called Jan Turan.
Oh, look at that. The country named themselves after you. Think of it that way. No.
you, that would be nice.
Yeah, right, exactly. I have a country named after me. Anyway, I want to thank you so much, Ramona, for being on the show. Check Ramona out with her band, Jan Turan, and you to see her live. And if you want to ask her any more questions about what it was like working with the big celebrities, I'm sure after the show you can go up and say, fantastic show, by the way, what was he like? And she'll tell you. So I want to wish you a happy holiday. I don't know what you celebrate, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, whatever. And thank you for being on the show. And we're going to wrap up the show right now with doing, because I figured why not use my talents here. So we'll use my Night Before Christmas. I'm going to do my fast-talking Night Before Christmas rendition. Here we go. Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, and a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung with the chimney with care, and hopes to St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children nestled snug in their bed, with vision sugar plum dancing their heads, and mom in a kerchief, and I in my cap, had just settled down for a long wizard nap, when out in the lung arose such a clatter. I sprang to the bed to see what was the matter. Wait to the window, flew like a flash, or opened the shutters, and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new fallen soul gave lustre to midday objects below, when what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer. With a little driver lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick, more rapid than eagles and horses they came, and they whistled and shouted and called them my name. Now dash and a dance and a to the vixen, a comet, a cupid, and down in a blix, at top of the porch, at top of the wall, then dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves that but for the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with the obstacle mount to the sky, so up to the house, up the courts as they flew, with a sleigh full of toys, at St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling, I heard on the roof, the prancing and pouring of each little hoof, as I drew in my hand, was turning around, down the chimney, St. Nicholas came in a bound. He was dressed all in fur from a head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung in his back, and he looked like a petal just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkle, his dimples, how merry, his cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn like a bow, and his beard and his chin was as white as snow. The stump of his pipe held tight in his teeth, and the smoke would encircle his head like a wreath. He had a broad little face and a round little belly that shook when he laughed, ha ha, like a laugh, bow full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, right jolly, and often I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. In a wink of his eye and a twist of his head, so gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, went straight to his work, and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying his fingers aside of his nose, and giving a nod up the chimney, he rose. He sprang to the sleigh, his team gave a whistle, and away they flew like the down of a thistle. But a hermit exclaimed, and he drove at his sight. right. Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night. Have a wonderful holiday season, you guys. I want to thanks again for listening to Fran's World on Westchester Talk Radio. And remember to always listen to Shark Creative and go to westchestertalkradio.com. Want to thank the producer of the show, Andrew, my engineer, Matt, and my sidekick, who is the wonderful broadcast announcer, Jim. Have a fantastic holiday. And remember, nothing is impossible. Create the universe that you want. See you next year.
Shark, Shark Creative.
Thank you, listener. Yes, Shark Creative is the company you think of for on-hold messages. If you want to hear how it helps, you can call Mercedes-Benz of New Rochelle, Durante Rentals, Michael Labriola, Inc., Oak Ridge Staffing, Emma's Ale House, Northeast Environmental, or just go to sharkcreative.com and listen there. Meanwhile, we've expanded our services as your all-audio resource. On-hold messages, of course, production and placement of radio campaigns on the Pete and others, too. And now we also have our very own internet radio station, Westchester Talk Radio. Look for us on Facebook at Westchester Talk. Have us come out to your next event, help you capture audio from your sponsors, associates, friends. Bite into that first impression with Shark Creative. Everything audio. It just sounds better.
Shark.